Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd, my co-host, Canucks insider Thomas Drance, also covering the team at The Athletic. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet. What are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And don't check your calendars. It is not actually trade deadline day in the NHL. We're still 48 hours away from trade deadline on Friday at noon, despite a flurry of activity in the hours before our show today, Drance.
I had a call scheduled with a contact for later in the day, like for like 11, you know what I mean? And I woke up and I was like, I'm going to get their sense of why the market's been so slow to develop. And I wrote a couple things I wanted to make sure I hit on a notebook, and that was at the top. And by the time I actually got on the phone 2 hours later,
it was no longer slow.
Completely irrelevant. I was just like, I'm skip that one. Yeah, move on to talking about all the activity. Colorado Avalanche Masterclass.
Mm-hmm.
Edmonton Oilers overpaying for, I don't know, stuff.
Mm-hmm. Players. NHL players.
Absolute guys.
Uh-huh. Absolute guys.
What else happened?
Those are two big ones. I mean,
Tarasenko.
That's right. Tarasenko to Florida as well.
One thing about Florida, they have zero assets, really, right?
Uh-huh.
And they have some really tough decisions to make this offseason. Gustav Forsling in particular, Sam Reinhart, Brandon Montour. Forsling's that team's best defenseman, by the way. In case you're not watching like a lot of Panthers, not even controversial.
Wow.
No question about it. I saw Jovanovski recently was on, it was either with Merrick or on Sirius NHL, and compared him to Lidstrom and said he was their most valuable defenseman. I had a bunch of people texting me like, what's Jovo, smoking or whatever? And I'd just be like, no, he's right. That's actually, I don't know about the Lidstrom. Maybe the Lidstrom comparison's a little overheated.
Yeah, probably.
But in terms of him being the best defenseman on that team, Gustav Forsling right now is the best defenseman on the best team in hockey. Like, that's just true. I don't know what else to say. It's wild.
Fair enough.
It's a wild. Anyway, thing about them is as few assets as they have, as all in as they've been, they're always going to have a guy like Tarasenko willing to steer himself toward, average temperatures of 28 degrees in December. Sunny Isles is like this Russian expat community, like Russian on the storefront awnings. You know what I mean? Like 75% of the population speaks Russian. It's a 30-minute drive. 25 if you buy the Sun Pass from the game rink. And even their captain, their Finnish captain, speaks Russian.
There you go.
I mean, you're always going to have an in on guys like Tarasenko. And that's sort of one reason why I won't be surprised if they keep going in, whether it's Pacioretty, whether it's something bigger.
Like other guys with no move clauses and no trade clauses, right? Because it fits the window for them because they don't have to use a lot of assets to potentially get those guys because other teams might not be in the running.
And even in free agency, whether it's free agency, whether it's at the trade deadline, like players choose them. So long as they're competitive, that's a magnet franchise now. You know? It's an interesting dynamic and one that actually does sort of shift, I think, how we should discuss about the prices that like a team like them they pay versus a team like
Edmonton.
I wasn't gonna say it.
That's true.
Heck yeah.
So look, there's a lot going on today, right? Because there have been a bunch of trades that have already gone down. There's been a bunch of interesting rumors and reports about the Canucks and where they stand in the market and what they're trying to do right now. Of course, the Canucks played a game last night. They beat the Kings 2-1 in overtime. We've got a busy show, as always, on Wednesdays. In just a few minutes here, Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal will join us for the crossover with Donnie and Dolly. Always look forward to that. So we'll get the latest from Dhaliwal and their thoughts on everything that's going on, and we'll talk to Jason Bukala at 1 o'clock as well. But yeah, just to recap, we will get into the game at some point, but just to recap what's gone down today, Tarasenko goes to Florida from Ottawa for a pair of mid-round picks. Colorado trades Ryan Johansson and a first to Philly for Sean Walker. Philly immediately puts Ryan Johansson on waivers, and then having brought in a defenseman, Colorado trades Bowen Byram to Buffalo for Casey Mittelstadt. one for one defenseman, young defenseman for a young forward center in Casey Mittelstadt. And also the Edmonton Oilers traded a first round pick and some other assorted things, some marginal stuff for salary retention and whatnot, to the Ducks for Adam Henrique and Sam Carrick. So a lot of activity, some of it in the Western Conference. I think we're probably in agreement that it's a really impressive morning's work for the Colorado Avalanche front office. We knew that Ryan Johansson had been seen as a problem in their lineup for a long time. They were looking for that legitimate second line center. Not only did they get Sean Walker, but they go out and get Casey Mittelstadt as well. And all of a sudden, the complexion of that team behind their first wave of superstars looks completely different than it did 24 hours ago.
I like the upside for Buffalo in acquiring Bowen Byram, you know, but you do have to factor in that the baseline for a player's durability like gets lowered, right, as the injury concerns mount around that player. And I do think we've hit a point, especially because Byram struggled so significantly this year, where you really do have to price that risk in. You know what I mean? Like, where our confidence in Byram being the sort of defenseman that he was when he played locally, right? And we're all rooting for him in this city, I can guarantee you that. Has sort of crossed a certain threshold. Whereas you bring in Casey Mittelstadt's not the fastest player, but he's so smart that he can play fast. And that's sort of what made him such a good fit in so many different positions and on so many different lines in Buffalo. And I just think Colorado, when you combine adding Mittelstadt and Walker into the lineup and removing Johansson and Byram, like, that's a team that's not just faster, but added intelligent players that can play even faster than they skate.
Yeah.
And that's scary because Colorado's already such a good team attacking against the grain. I mean, center depth's been an issue for them, but all of a sudden you're going to be able to attack teams with McKinnon, Mittelstadt, and Ross Colton. And that feels an awful lot better, especially, you know, I mean, we'll see what happens with Landeskog. But especially because you can put Nichushkin and Lehkonen on the wings of Mittelstadt and cover up any supposed defensive deficiencies, like, almost entirely, given the quality of those defensive wingers. Last thing, Colorado's $5 million in cap space still.
Yeah.
That's a team that might not necessarily be done.
So don't rule them out on anything that might still happen, again, with 48 hours
today
to go. They're really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, really
excellent
good work
stuff
by Colorado. All right. It's time for the crossover with our pals Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal from Donnie and Dolly, Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Czech TV. And guys, how's it going? It's been a busy morning around the NHL so far.
Rick's never been this rattled. So many things happened in the last couple of hours. And, well, both of us had a tough time. He's so rattled he had to put on a coat for you guys.
No, I got a jacket on because it's minus 40 in here, and Taylor doesn't let us turn the heat up, which is ridiculous. Right now my hands, I need gloves. We're in a dungeon, and he won't let us put the heat up. So I got to wear this jacket.
Is Taylor paying the bill for the heating or something? What's going on?
Oh, it must be that because he won't let us turn the heat up, and I'm freezing, so I'm wearing a jacket.
And you're not.
You know what? I didn't grow up with it, but I watched a lot of Letterman, and Letterman always made a point, and his guests used to always complain about the heavily air-conditioned studio to the point where it was freezing in his studio.
That's right.
And I don't know, it had a big influence on me. As you can tell, what I'm doing right now is very similar to what Letterman was doing, except for the paycheck.
I just like that Rick has an olive drab colored Run DMC Adidas jumper. Like, that is so 80s, bro.
I have a green jacket. It's a green jacket.
I would call it olive drab.
You don't have to explain it with 40 words.
No laces.
He does. He absolutely does have to explain it. All right, let's start. I mean, it's trade season. We're just a couple days out from the trade deadline. We're seeing what's happening. We're seeing the reports about the Canucks. Rick, let's start with Jake Guentzel. What can you tell us about where the Canucks stand in relation to Jake Guentzel right now?
Well, first I want to say this, you know, Canucks are looking at all options as they try and improve this team. Yes, they're aggressive, but they've been aggressive for a while. But that aggressiveness doesn't mean they're close on Guentzel. Aggressive and close are two different things. I checked in with the Guentzel camp this morning, just all around. The Canucks are still obviously in the mix. They don't want to give up on the guy. But the price for this guy is still very high. There will be no extension with the player. You know, some people think it's close. I'm certainly not hearing it's close with Gensel. I mean, things can change with one phone call. We all know that. We've seen that happen over the years. But not sure Vancouver can do this, guys, if they don't want to give up Lekaramäki and Willander. The prospect pool dips pretty darn fast after those two guys. So they're in there trying. They're trying their best. As you know, Rutherford is the king of telling his staff to get creative and think outside the box. To get Gensel, they're going to have to get creative.
And part of the creativity would be this rumor that we heard last night. It was all around Twitter about flipping Elias Lindholm to Boston in order to accommodate a trade for Jake Gensel. And we've made the point that, you know, back in, I want to say, well, my notes here, 2018, they picked up Tanner Pearson, the Penguins did. You guys might remember that. Then flipped him 2 or 3 months later to Vancouver. So Rutherford has done this sort of thing before. Write that down. Write that down, Thomas.
Write that down, Thomas.
I think there's a distinction, though, because Pearson was traded for, I think it was Hagelin, but I'm not 100%.
Yeah, it was.
And
yes.
So I don't need to write it down because I have
good Branson in the
top of my head. But he wasn't a premium rental, right? Like Lindholm was a piece they paid a premium rental price to bring in. And to me, that makes it distinct. I can't remember a team making a big deadline swing to bring in a rental player and then turning around and dealing him before the deadline. I mean, that would be truly unprecedented as far as I can think. If someone's going to do it, you know, the guy we wouldn't put it past necessarily is Jim Rutherford. Yeah. Rick, what are you hearing on this? My understanding is, you know, it's real, but it's not necessarily the club's plan going into the last 48 hours before the deadline.
Well, Lindholm, first of all, let me say this. He hasn't been the difference maker offensively they thought he would be. He's on the third line center, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't think the Canucks think he can play wing because they've tried him at wing in the top six and it's not working out. They thought there would be instant chemistry with Pettersson there, but there really wasn't. Sometimes, Thomas, you just got to admit there's a mistake and move on. I don't believe trading Lindholm was on the plate last week, but things have changed. I mean, look what's happening. And we just talked about this on the show. Edmonton, Colorado, Vegas, Dallas. Dallas got Tanev. Mm-hmm. Vegas gets Mantha. Colorado, Walker, Mittelstadt. You know, Edmonton, Adam Henrique. And all of a sudden, the Canucks are sitting there and thinking, how do we get into the arms race? Well, you know, and then things start popping up. They don't want to give up their first round pick. They don't want to give up Willander and Lekaramäki. So, you know, hey, how can we do this thing? And I think it was just born out of, you know, it's the prices are high out there. You know, Barry Trotz in Nashville said yesterday he can't believe how high the prices are out there this week. So
sounds like a reason to sell, Barry.
Difficult to do a deal, Thomas.
Sounds like a reason to get selling.
No kidding.
Hey, so just to come back to Gensel, right, Rick, and sort of the hierarchy of options available to the Canucks who still want, as we know, to add a scoring forward, a scoring winger to bolster their top six, right? Because I think that's what you're talking about with Lindholm, right? That was what they were hoping to get in Lindholm and what they haven't to this point. They're still looking for it. My sort of sense of the Gensel thing, Rick, is obviously they've checked in. Obviously they've inquired. It doesn't seem to me that there's a lot of confidence on the Canucks side that they're going to land this player, but they're going to be in on it.
That's what we're hearing.
But they're going to be in on it until
to the end.
Until the end, just because of their regard for the player. Does that match what you're hearing there?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They love the player.
Yep.
They would love to do the deal for Gensel. They love the player. They got a history. Rutherford. They have a good relationship with the agent, Ben Hankinson, who represents Brock Besser.
Yep.
So they have a good relationship with Ben Hankinson, the agent. They're trying to get it done. It's hard. It's not easy. But you know what? Let's see if they can pull it off. I would never count out Rutherford when he is this active on a guy.
Mm.
Like, I mean, I've had people tell me this morning, hey, Rick, it's not going to happen with Gensel. It's not. But I keep telling him I wouldn't rule Rutherford out, anything he does. And we talked about it on the show. I wouldn't rule out anything that Rutherford's trying to get with as much as he is, as hard as he's going after Gensel. Don't rule it out.
Yep.
Yeah. Isn't it fun, though, guys, to have Jim Rutherford?
It's a blast.
I mean, I know Patrick Alvin's the GM. I get that. But given his history and the moves he's made already, he's not afraid. It's just fantastic for our business and our business and our selfishness aside, for fans too. Like all the conversation that's going on right now, our inbox is flooded. I'm sure yours is the same. You can say what you want about Jim Rutherford. Remember, there was some talk. He's too old. You know what? No, I mean, this is just, it's been fabulous so far.
Well, and I love the guts that it takes to take a swing like that on Lindholm and be willing to say, you know what? I thought this would work out. It's not working out. I'm not too proud to admit maybe I made a mistake and go out and try to improve the team, right? Rather than doubling down on it. Sometimes the best thing to do is try to go out and go in a different direction if it's not working.
And you know, I know, Donnie, you said you don't want to take any credit away from Patrick Alvin, and he obviously is a huge part of this, right? I do think Rutherford's a driving force in Vancouver's aggression, but, you know, Alvin's doggedness in poking around, right? There's a reason Rick keeps using the term poking around. And it's not just that, you know, he's the pokeroo of Hockey Insiders. It's also that the Canucks are truly, you know, active on all these fronts, which sort of brings me to my next question, Rick. 48 hours till the deadline. Canucks want a scoring winger. There's a couple of interesting situations with teams that happen to be staffed by Rutherford lieutenants. Tom Fitzgerald in New Jersey. Obviously, he's got Tyler Toffoli. Ron Francis, and of course, his assistant general manager, Jason Botterill. Longtime Rutherford collaborators in Carolina. Carolina are the managing in Seattle. They've got Jordan Eberle. Do you think the Canucks will check in on that tier of winger, Rick, before moving down and chasing the likes of a Zucker in the event that they can't get the Gensel deal across the line?
Well, I think they're in on Zucker more than you think they are, Thomas, because we had Chris Johnson on. He said they checked in again this morning on Zucker. I asked about Zucker 3 weeks ago, and I was told the Canucks had no interest. This is a classic case. You got 10 guys on a list and you can't get the first six because the price is so high. You start moving down that list and look at this guy. We didn't want him 3 weeks ago, but we might want him now. You know, you got McCabe, no goals in 32 games. Suter, no goals in 16 games. You can't go into the playoffs with that. Those guys shooting blanks like that, you can't have it. So I think Zucker, they're in on. I talked to Zucker's agent last night. He feels a ton of teams are in on him right now. I think they made an offer.
Of course,
he's
going to say
that. I think they made it. No, there are none, though. Yeah. I think they made an offer for Zucker. We'll see where it goes. But Zucker, they know Rutherford knows him from his Pittsburgh days, right?
Yeah, he does. By the way, speaking of a flurry of activity here, we got another one going down right now. So we go to the trade desk, brought to you by Jags Furniture and Mattress. Emily Kaplan from ESPN reporting that the New York Rangers are closing in on a trade for Kraken center Alex Wennberg. And, you know, it's interesting, like a lot of teams trading for forwards that aren't Jake Gensel. And I do wonder, I know you've mentioned Carolina and Friedman mentioned Carolina as well. We've also heard, and I know from CJ on your show today, that the market maybe wasn't as robust for Jake Gensel as Pittsburgh was hoping it would be. And I don't know, if with all these other teams making other moves, I wonder if we could see the price on Gensel come down as we get closer to Friday here.
Well, he's been injured, too.
Well, he's injured. That's it.
He's been injured, so maybe in a strange way. Well, I don't know if it's strange or not. It's understandable. Maybe that helps that helps the Canucks. But, well, you know, getting back to Rutherford, one thing that I like, and you know, number one, it helps our business in doing a talk show, is that so many times in the past, usually you see this, where you hear all this talk about a player and it ends up being somebody else that the Canucks get, right? Yeah. No names come to mention, but you know, come to mind, but you know that's happened. With Rutherford, I believe he, you know, sets, like the same with Lindholm and Zadorov, you know, he targets those guys and he ends up getting them, which is really, really commendable and makes it really, really interesting. So I wouldn't be surprised for a second if Gensel comes here, especially if his value has dropped because of this injury.
Okay, so the other thing on Gensel, the Canucks wanted to, when I checked in a couple of weeks, they wanted to do an extension, and like a sign and trade, right, guys?
Yep.
But I as I heard on Monday, Gensel's not interested in that. He's going to be the number one guy on July 1st. He's going to command a ton of bucks. Why sign now when July 1st you're going to be possibly the top guy there too? So the Penguins lose a lot of leverage there when he doesn't want to sign right now, right? And you got to remember, Dubas is trying to hit a hole. He's trying to hit a grand slam for his new bosses, right?
Mm-hmm.
They got to get younger. So he's going to use Gensel to absolutely. They're the oldest team in the NHL. So he's got to use it. He's got to hit a grand slam for his new bosses. And I think that's what he's trying to do.
And I think the other thing with Gensel, and I wanted to bring this player up, you know, we've heard Nils Höglander's name thrown around, right? And, you know, I know you've reported and Drance has reported that they're not interested in Lekkerimäki, Vilander, right? They don't want to move those guys. If you're taking those guys off the table, mm-hmm. would you have to include Höglander? And, you know, at this point, you look at the way he's playing right now, what he's done scoring goals 5-on-5. Look, obviously, Gensel is a far more accomplished and a better player, but if you're taking somebody out of your lineup and bringing Gensel in, okay, you're better, but it feels like there's a lot of risk there. And, you know, just the way Höglander's played over the last 6 weeks or so, I don't know if they can afford to make that move, even if they're bringing in a player like Jake Gensel.
No.
Yeah, I don't think risk, though, bothers Jim Rutherford.
That's true.
Given his history, there just seems to be so much there with Höglander. You look at his ice time, like there's like Lafferty, McKeev, way more ice time, average ice time than Nils Höglander, and 19 even strength goals, to the point where he's got more even strength goals than Marchand and Tkachuk, Matthew Tkachuk and Connor McDavid. I will say this, though, I think it would be a mistake to give up on Nils Höglander, but if you're the Pittsburgh Penguins, I think what you want now are young players that can possibly or probably help you right now versus draft picks, because you still have Crosby there, you have Malkin there, and Letang and Carlson. So it might make a whole lot of sense. But do you want to give up on Nils Höglander?
No.
For Gensel? I'm not
19
so sure.
goals, guys, and look at the cost efficiency of his price in the top six.
And
why
for next
do you
year,
give
Rick?
Up a guy, and next year, why would you want to cough up a young guy that's on pace for 20-25 goals, and at that cost in the top six? You want guys like that. You don't want to get rid of them.
The only reason to do it is if you don't think he can do it again, and I personally think he can do it again.
Mm.
And just to the point about the ice time, Donnie, because you're right, for so much of the year that's been noticeable, up over 15 minutes, top six, 5-on-5 ice time yesterday for Höglander. So I wonder if even Rick Tocchet is maybe coming around a little bit, willing to play him more of those typical top 6 minutes. Go ahead, Drance.
Well, let's quickly talk Podkolzin, Rick. What were your impressions of his first two games? What do you make of him being reassigned today?
Well, a lot of people, I have to be honest with you, Thomas, a lot of people thought he was brought up to be showcased. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 12 minutes first game, 9 minutes second game. Obviously, he wasn't going to see a ton of ice last night in a 1-1 game in the third. He just wasn't going to see that. And so, look, we talked about it on the show. You want to see more offense from a guy that went 10th overall. But I was told by someone this week, stop. Forget about he went 10th overall. This is where we're at. You know, this is a player trying to make it in the National Hockey League. But everyone liked the pace. His skating's better. Forecheck, backcheck, he tried hard. But, I mean, I think for a 10th overall pick, you want to see more offense. We didn't see a ton of offense from him.
I don't think he moves his feet enough. I know that he's better than he was, but I just don't see him moving his feet. And in the NHL, you have to move your feet at all times. And I don't think, Rick Tocchet talks about it a lot, and I don't see that from him. Maybe other people have a different opinion of him, but I don't see him moving his feet the way maybe he should. Well, the way definitely he should at the National Hockey League level. I know that's a complaint for a lot of players, going back to Jake Virtanen and long before that. But that's just something I notice about him, and I wonder if that's one of the reasons why the Canucks have sent him back down to Abbotsford.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that he had some flashes where it looked good, but it wasn't like sustained impact on a shift-by-shift basis in his two games. Sounds like, by the way, the Canucks were just eager to get a couple of these guys, Baines, Podkolzin, into the lineup so that if they're needed down the line, they're not wide-eyed, bushy-tailed, adjusting to NHL activity. Also, I poked around a little bit this morning
I was wondering.
Look at you poking around.
I was poking
around. That's Dollywall's beat. What are you
true.
Doing?
I was on the pokeroo.
I bet you did.
I was on the
Which Twitter account were you using to poke around?
A now.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. Whoa. Shots flying.
Which do you think I was using, Rick?
Go ahead. Go ahead. What were you poking around?
Oh, I know which one you're using.
No comment.
No comment.
It says it all.
One of your five accounts you got.
I have one account and I have never run a burner. Just want that on the record.
There you go.
To get to something true that exists in reality and not just in the paranoid imaginings of the worst possible people that follow this hockey team. I was wondering if the Canucks might risk a Mark Friedman or a Neil Zaman on waivers ahead of the deadline just to open up some additional cap flexibility. I don't expect that. Tomorrow's sort of the last day that the club can throw one of those guys on waivers and then realize the cap benefit right before the deadline passes. I don't assume that they'll do so.
And just on that point about kind of salary cap space and roster space as we hit this deadline, Rick, what's the latest on Phil Kessel? Because it feels like it's getting a little late. If they want to do other moves and potentially add him, it's getting pretty complicated at this point.
Yeah, so when the Canucks announced Pod Colson to the minors today, everyone thought it was to make room for Phil Kessel. I was told no. Still up in the air. It's a holding pattern. I don't know, like, Thomas, you would know better because you're good with that stuff if it's cap-related or trade-related. I was told that if the Vancouver Canucks don't sign Kessel, it is not because of conditioning. I think he's done everything they've asked him to in the past two and a half weeks. I think that conditioning wouldn't be the issue. As far as I was told this morning, it would be some other reason. But I mean, everybody thought it was trending last week. Everybody wants to do it. He was brought here so they could work him out and sign him.
Yeah.
Like, so many people felt when he first got here that it was a done deal. Right. So, but they're in a holding pattern right now. But no signing as of this morning.
Yeah, my understanding is the decision still hasn't been made. It definitely has to be made over the next 47 hours here. So, we're getting late in the process.
Sure.
It seems odd at this point, Rick. Like, we're now at the point where just the safe assumption we've had, you know, governing us to this point where, like, it'll get done eventually. Is that in any doubt for you?
Yeah. Yeah, I was told last week it was heading towards getting done, and then all of a sudden it stopped. And he's still here. He's waiting. He's waiting for the decision. His agent, their camp, is waiting for the decision. It's not – I can tell you this. The holdup ain't on the Kessel side. The holdup is on the other side. So,
well, it makes you think that they've got something else planned. If that doesn't come through, they go to plan B, which would be
Donnie, the other thing is if you sign him, there's two things that are going to happen. You could waive him and send him to the minors, or you could sign him and say two-week conditioning stint. So, I mean, it's just not an easy decision like, okay, he's fit, let's do it. I just think there's a lot of other things at play.
Either way, you'd use a recall to bring him back up to the NHL if you wanted to give him those games.
Yeah.
Last thing, Rick, some buzz in the industry about some scouting changes in the Canucks front office. You hearing the same?
Yeah, the Canucks have let go longtime Russian scout Sergei. Donnie, you want to know?
Chubasov.
Chibasov.
Chibasov. Yeah, that's it. Thank you.
I had it, right. Don't worry.
I don't want to screw it up. But you had it wrong, Drance. Anyways, Canucks have fired longtime Russian scout Sergei Chibasov. Some say.
Was that so hard?
If I screw it up, then you guys are going to laugh. Anyways, with the Canucks 2020. Some say he was with the Canucks 25 years. I've been told he's already landed with the Dallas Stars, so I think the Canucks are now interviewing for that position.
25 years?
Yeah, that's what I heard. Yeah. Thomas, you know if he's been there that long? Someone said really long time he was there.
Thomas is 21 years old. How does he know that?
I mean, he's certainly been there for... He's certainly been there for 12 years, like as long as I've been covering the team.
Yeah, I think
I wouldn't be surprised if he was among the old guard.
Yeah, he was among the old guard, I was told. But Chibasov is he's no longer there.
By the way, that was the meanest thing Drance has ever done to you, Dollywall, throwing you a hand grenade in the form of a Russian name out of nowhere there.
Hey,
he was like, hey, are you hearing about a certain Russian scout?
since 94-95. So, yeah, that's...
And he,
a long time.
What is it?
30 years.
Thomas, what is it?
30 years, Chibisov. Amateur scout.
Chibisov. Oh. No, he's been the, yeah, that's what I was told. 25, 30 years he's been with the team. But not anymore. He's with Dallas.
All right, we got to let you guys run. We'll have to get the story of you hitting a moose up north another time, Dollywall. I was tipped off about that, but I think we're out of time.
He actually hit the Pokeroo.
That's exactly what it is, a story.
Hey, it's a true story. I'll tell you guys later.
Okay, we'll hear that later. Enjoy the next couple days. We'll chat next week. All right, that is Don Taylor, Rick Dollywall from Donnie and Dolly on Check TV, Monday to Friday, 10 to noon. There's just an awful lot going on, man. There is a lot going on. And by the way, I loved that from you, throwing this. Hey, can you pronounce this Russian name off the top of your head, Dollywall? I ask you about without warning?
Oh, there was
very
warning.
Good.
There was warning.
All
don't
right.
worry.
Okay.
Informal between us. Between at least I sent him a DM about it from one of my burners just to mess with him. Rick is going to find it one day. He's like legitimately got a True Detective style storyboard. You know what I mean? Or like one of those cork boards. Like he is straight up Charlie from
Always Sunny. I do want to be clear because I'm the one poking the bear and bringing it up. I don't think you have these hidden burners. I just know Dollywall does. So yeah, I like to bring it up in front of Dollywall to get him going.
Dollywall's credulity is his one drawback. Right? Like one person once accused me of it, and he's thought it ever since.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. We'll take a break. As I said, there is tons to get into. We'll read some text. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Talk about the game a little bit that happened last night as well. Get into everything going on around the NHL at the trade deadline. Lots more coming up here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Big opinions and good bets. It's the People's Show with Bick Nizar. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance live from the Kintech studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at DunbarLumber.com. That was a jam-packed edition of the crossover on a very news-heavy and rumor-heavy day here around the Canucks, around the NHL as well. But I did want to, we've barely mentioned it, the fact that the Canucks beat the Kings in LA 2-1 in overtime last night. They fell behind 1-0 in the first. Pettersson ties it with a lovely goal in the second. Miller gets the win with a 4-on-3 goal in overtime. And I got to say, there's like so much of the discussion around this game that I've seen has revolved around being disgusted by the Kings and their neutral zone trap and their 1-3-1. Oh, it was so boring. I hated it. I actually really enjoyed that game.
It was
fun. It had like a chess match element to it that I really liked. I feel like when one team is doing that, it's really easy to just imagine them as the antagonist and the Canucks are the protagonist in a story, right? Like they're trying to overcome the hyper defensive LA Kings. But it wasn't a playoff game. It wasn't that level of intense, but it felt like ramping up towards that. Like these are potential playoff opponents and they're seeing what each other is made of. And I thought it was a really entertaining, well-fought, competitive game.
So one thing you get sometimes with teams that are on the come up, younger teams, Canucks aren't the youngest team, but they're still a young team, especially in terms of their best players, is teams throw this hyper-disciplined 1-3-1 at them and they're completely flummoxed by it. One thing I really liked about Vancouver's performance is they found intelligent ways, some punt and hunt, and adopting a little more punt and hunt than we typically see from this team. That self-passed from JT Miller to himself, for example, streaking through the 1-3-1 on that one first period entry. We saw the club find clever ways of getting around, getting through, beating LA's 1-3-1. And that's good. Like, that's a very good sign. It's a credit to Rick Tocchet, and it's a credit to the maturity of Canucks players. I like that. I also like this. Even as well as this team played in October and November, I'm telling you right now,
this team didn't have a high enough level, 5-on-5, to hold up in a game like that, in my opinion. The fact that the Canucks were able to hang with the Kings in that style of game for 60 minutes, and they did, aside from, you know, a few hiccups, a pretty uninspired first period, five really ugly minutes in the third, which I'm going to come back to when I do the downside. Aside from that, they held up, and in fact were probably narrowly better, although not by as much as the underlying numbers suggest, in my opinion. I like that too, right? Like, that to me is a testament to how much this team has grown, figured out how to play in this style of game, and you know, to me that's a mark of an improved team, even if the results have been a little bit more mixed over the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, I think that's all. I think that, again, I come back to the game they lost against Colorado, the game they lost against Winnipeg, where I thought they played pretty well in those games. And yep. I throw that one, right? It's like, these are playoff type games against totally. Really good teams, and they're right there. And they are right there, and they're knife edge games one way or another. Now, would you love to see them dominate some of those teams? Yeah, sure. But again, as a baseline, if you're consistently hanging with good playoff teams and in these really tight competitive games, that's important. Like, I think that that's a really important milestone for this team to be hitting, and they'll get more chances, right? They play Vegas, they play Colorado again. They still got LA a couple times, so we'll have more chances to see that. But I think that speaks pretty highly of this team kind of getting ready to compete in the playoffs.
Well, and I'd add this, you know, with the exception of the 2-0 win against Dallas in early November, right, where Demko was unbelievable, right? Mm-hmm. That was that Wyatt Johnston save, remember? Yep. Like, until last night, that was probably his save of the year.
Yep.
And then he makes that robbery off Turcotte last night, and that's probably now the save of the year. But, I mean, that was a wild game. The Canucks were very fortunate on that play, and then also late in the second period where there was that wild goal-mouth scramble. Like, aside from that, you know, that Winnipeg game, the two games against Colorado have not gone their way. We know what they looked like against Vegas, right? We saw how they looked like that first game against Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like that game in early November and those three against the Oilers are kind of the only examples we'd had of this team playing and winning, defeating one of the better teams in the Western Conference, right? I mean, you know.
Yeah, because some of their other good performances, Carolina, they beat twice, you know, the Rangers.
Like, it came against the top
Eastern Conference
teams,
yeah.
Right? So I think that side of it matters too. Now, that said, because I thought there was a lot to like from the Canucks' performance, and I don't want to be too dour about it. The Kings imposed their style of game on that game successfully. That game looked the way LA wanted it to, not the way that Vancouver wanted it to. And LA's strategy worked. They had their shots. The Canucks made their mistakes. Their bet is, we're going to be able to punish this team on the counter, and they were right. They had 2 2-on-1s and hit another post shortly mm-hmm. after their second 2-on-1 in the first 5 minutes of the third. The Canucks made their mistakes, and the Kings had their chances, and they just missed their shot. And the Canucks were probably fortunate. Like, those were bounces. It's bounces. When you rob a guy like Turcotte, who double clutches for just that extra split second, it's a great save by Demko and takes nothing away from him. But that's a bounce, right? When they then hit the outside of the post on their next 2-on-1 and then Drew Doughty hits the post seconds later, that's a bounce. Canucks have actually been due some bounces on the defensive end. I'd say the rate at which Canucks mistakes have ended up in the back of the net over the last 3.5 weeks has been like unsustainably high. Feels like every mistake this team makes has been punished.
Is ending in the back of the net.
Yeah. Of late. So I actually think they were due some positive regression, some errors that, you know, were robbed by a goaltender or that just narrowly missed. But nonetheless, I do think it's worth noting, LA imposed their own flow on the game, and they got the chances they were looking for. Their tactic worked.
See, I wouldn't
and the Canucks escaped with 2 points.
I wouldn't necessarily say they imposed their flow on the game. They decided how the game was going to be played,
yep.
But then there were long stretches where Vancouver was winning in that environment.
Especially,
you know what I mean?
Especially the latter half of the second
period. Yeah, so it wasn't as if, okay, we're going to do the 1-3-1, and then they wrested control of the game with that. You're right, they kind of set the environment, but then there were times when Vancouver was winning in that environment that LA had chosen to play in. You know what I mean? And that's a key point for me.
Fair. There was 10 minutes in the second period where that was true.
but the Canucks were never generating the quality of looks that the Kings did in the first 5 minutes of the third.
Yeah, but I also think if you added up total grade A chances in that game, it's got to be pretty even.
Oh, yeah, sure. But
you know what I mean?
Extremely low.
Sure. Yeah.
Extremely low.
But that's one of the things I keep coming back to.
But if
to,
you are the team with more talented shooters and the better goalie, your interest is in opening it up.
Yeah, but I also Kings don't. I also think if you're like, okay, we're okay grinding a game to dust with another team because we have the better goalie and the better shooters.
If
right,
wanna,
I can see the logic there.
If you want to grind a game to dust, right, or if you're going to say that this team was equal to that challenge, you can't give up 2 2-on-1s. Like the Canucks weren't close to getting anything like a 2-on-1 in a game with those few events. The quality of chances that the Kings had in the opening 5 minutes so far overwhelmed any chances that the Canucks had. Period. The Kings got their chances. They got their looks. They just missed them. That's the difference in the game.
That because I've agreed with you largely about the Canucks' struggles to generate 5-on-5 chances. They're also just really good at limiting them. Like, yeah.
They are.
The Kings
Kings
had a handful of really good chances, for sure. But it wasn't. It was nothing offensively to write home about for the Kings.
Well, except for the 5 minutes in the
sure,
third period.
Sure, but that was a blip, right? And I agree with you. Like, no, you want to eliminate
that. That was what the Kings were looking for all game.
But if you give up those handful of chances, you'll take that every game.
If you give up 2-2-on, I guarantee you that's not how Rick Tocchet
feels. 2-2-on-1s?
I guarantee you that's not how Rick... No, 2-on-1s, man, those are... In a game state like that... Those are glaring errors. Those are problems.
I'm just saying, you look at it in total, what like they that. Gave up, though, in the game was not that
no,
bad.
No, no, no. It was a really strong... Both of those games in Southern California were excellent defensive performances.
Mm-hmm.
We know that this team is sturdy defensively, I think. I mean, you know, that's never been the concern. There's a reason the Canucks are hot after a top six winger as opposed to a four defenseman, right? Like... But I guarantee you, Rick Tocchet was not happy about those first 5 minutes.
I'm not saying it's like don't give up or it's not a big deal to give up the 2-on-1. Sure, but I just think if you look at the totality of what they're giving up, and even last night,
no,
you can live with that.
Mostly you can. Except that the Kings' bet there was if we hold this, they will get a shot.
Yep.
They will be the team that makes the mistake, and we will get our shots. And that was right. And so there's still another level of comfort that I think the Canucks have to get to, right? Because you're not getting 3-on-3 overtime. You're not getting 4-on-3 power play in overtime of a Stanley Cup playoff game. And one of those mistakes in the playoffs, especially in playoff overtime, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I thought they were ultimately fortunate a little bit in the third period. I know they were. They were, period. And the Kings just missed their shot. And that's going to happen sometimes. But that was the bet that the Kings made, and they made it successfully, in my view, even though they lost.
I can see the appeal of the Canucks trying to go, okay, we're fine playing this defensive game. Yes, they have to clean up those odd man rushes against because, like, I don't think they need to go in and try to make LA open the game up, right? I get what you're saying.
Where
you have the better shooters, you're okay with a higher event game.
Go look at where those 2-on-1s came from. They, in fact, came from the Canucks trying to open it up.
Yeah.
They, you know, what you have to do is have the... You know, commitment to playing that game, to playing that super contained game and avoiding what happened is that ultimately the Canucks blinked a couple times, and when they did, the Kings were ready. Right? That's the Kings' bet was they will blink. And the Canucks did, and they won anyway.
It just feels a little bit like the Canucks reminded me of a really defensive soccer team that has like a star forward still. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like they're going to create a moment of brilliance. And that's Elias Pettersson did
Forza
that.
Forza Azzurri?
Yeah. And Elias Pettersson did that,
yeah,
right?
Fair.
With a moment of brilliance to open it up. And
that was an unbelievable sequence.
Man.
And Quinn Hughes on that entire shift. Well, and that's the other thing. Like one thing that still plays for the Canucks, even in a low event environment like that, is those shifts with Hughes and Hronek on the ice.
Mm.
But this team generates all of their chances. Like 75% of their scoring chances came in the Hughes-Hronek pair's minutes. Very little occurred otherwise, which, you know, remains a reason why if there was an opportunity to add a Jake Bean or an Erik Brännström type to this lineup, I'd still love to see that for a moderate cost, just because I do think you don't want to be too dependent on the top pair being on the ice to generate goals.
I do think the other thing is not that you want to be relying on Demko to be making those types of saves against Turcotte, because, I mean, look, it's phenomenal, absolutely, what he did. But it does illustrate the idea that the Canucks' star talent gives them a greater margin for error than LA has, for example, right? Like, LA has to be perfect or almost perfect in their game plan. You want the Canucks to be perfect in their game plan, of course, but you do have a little bit of that safety net, not just in the form of Demko, but in the what the guys can do up front as well, right?
Cam Talbot played well, though, right? I mean, the idea of there being this huge discrepancy is true in that I'd much rather have Demko. But it's also it also doesn't matter as much as you feel like it should when you look at the two teams on paper, given the way that LA plays.
Yeah, I don't think it's just Demko, though, that gives the Canucks the greater margin. I think
also their finishing.
It's the two-star forwards, agreed, really, and Besser. You can throw in there as well.
Really quick, Carson Soucy being back, thank goodness. There was the Teddy Bluger breakaway right off the hop, or partial break, was set up by Soucy perfectly defending an entry and then finding the quick outlet, and it was just like, oh, I missed that. That's so good. That's so good.
He's really good, man.
And I just want to shout out the fourth line, because the fourth line dragged a bit, and we talked a little bit about how things have eaten away at the quality of Vancouver's forward depth, but Lafferty, DiGiuseppe, Bluger with like an exclamation mark beside Lafferty's name, great game last night. I thought they were awesome. I thought Lafferty was an essential piece of them emerging with 2 points, or at least, getting the game to overtime and then ultimately winning it. Lafferty's ability to play a physical, fast game, the way that he was in the faces of Kings forwards all night, like, I just thought that was a huge part of it. And then last thing, Pew Suter, top six forward. Did you notice that when he went on to the JT Miller line, they had their best month of the year? And by the way,
now he's playing with Elias Pettersson, and it's
Elias
working
Pettersson
really
just
well.
Had two of his best 5-on-5 games in months. Not that it's all Pew Suter. Like, obviously, we know what JT Miller and Brock Besser can do to
Cook. I thought Hoglander was really good last night, too, on that line.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. He was. But you throw the gap in quality, in my view, as like a complimentary top six in a complimentary role in the top six between what Suter gives you in that spot versus what a DiGiuseppe, what a Mikheyev, whatever other combinations, Lafferty, whatever other combinations the Canucks have tried out, it's substantive, right? Like, in seeking to upgrade their top six forward group, upgrading on Pew Suter is not the reason for it. You know what I mean? Like, he can do the job, and in fact does the job very, very well. Just wanted to spotlight that before we go to break.
All right, Jason Buchla joins us next. We'll get his thoughts on some of the trades going on around the NHL and maybe what the Canucks should be looking at as well. That's coming up next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Strantz live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The hotline is brought to you by Dispatch Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. The first call, the only call. Jason Buchla is going to join us momentarily here. And in fact, we now have Jason on the line. So we will go to the Dispatch Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning hotline. Jason, part of Sportsnet's NHL coverage, of course, and also a former NHL scout. How's it going?
Busy, holy!
Yeah, no jumping. Kidding, huh?
What's going on all of a sudden here?
There
better be something left to do on Friday. We'll be twiddling our thumbs, drinking coffee.
I was going to say they're sabotaging our broadcasts on Friday. The GMs, they're conspiring against us. Flurry of moves already today. Some really fascinating ones as well. I want to start with probably the most interesting from my perspective, what the Colorado Avalanche did, bringing in Sean Walker, Ryan Johansson's out, and then Bowen Byram in a separate deal goes to Buffalo, and they bring in Casey Mittelstadt. So Byram and Johansson replaced by Casey Mittelstadt and Sean Walker. How much better are the Avalanche today than they were yesterday?
They're different. I don't know. I don't know for this stretch run if they're necessarily better. I have to be perfectly honest with you. Like the Mittelstadt acquisition I understand on the surface what it's. I know what they're trying to do here. Obviously, trying to upgrade in the two hole, get some more scoring. You know, he's going to bring in more offense than Johansson was providing. There's no doubt about that. But you know, the thing with Mittelstadt guys is that the games get exceptionally hard in playoffs. And if you're not in a track meet type of a situation in playoffs, and you have to get to the interior more, you know, go to the front of the net and, you know, extend plays along the wall and stuff like that in the offensive zone, that's not his area of strength or willingness, to be perfectly honest with you. And he wins about 47% of his draws. And, I mean, it's incredible. I don't have it in front of me, but I can say with a lot of confidence, I think this player has, on the entire season, he's played every game, less than 30 hits on the entire year, which is, that's hard to do in the NHL. Like, sometimes you just run into people, right? So they're going to be different that way up front. On the back end, you know, again, with Walker, it makes it a little bit more of a natural fit. Byron was playing the right side for a lot of the time, and Walker obviously is a right shot D there. And, you know, he's going to – it's about the same on balance offensively. Walker, though, is going to do some of the other little small things differently than Byron. He doesn't skate as well as Byron. He doesn't transport the puck as well. He won't add as much of an extra layer offensively, but he'll block more shots and he'll bump up against opponents just a little bit more. So that one there is a soft. The one up front, I see that, more scoring. But I'm concerned still in the trenches when the games get hard, what Mittelstadt's going to offer the Avs.
Do your Mittelstadt concerns get allayed at all if I was to tell you that he'll play with Lehkonen and Nichushkin?
Well, I mean, anytime. Well, Nichushkin's just he's a monster of a man, right? So I get the premise. And but you know, the funny thing is, at the hardest time of year, you know, not everybody wants to do all the heavy lifting for their line mates. Like, we want everybody to kind of pitch in here. Mm-hmm. So if I give him the benefit of the doubt, I would imagine he's going to be motivated and he's going to want to elevate in certain areas of his game. And the coach will explain to him, you know, what the expectation is and how they play. Obviously, they're in Colorado. So the line mates certainly factor into it. But I'm just let's just say that one caught me off guard today. That's the one that caught me off guard. And that might be the one that catches me off guard for the entire week.
Hmm. What are your thoughts on the other big deal, the Edmonton Oilers acquisition of Adam Henrique and Sam Carrick?
Love it. Absolutely love it. I think that's a savvy bit of business there by Edmonton. The Edmonton Oilers just got even harder to play against come playoff time, guys. Adam Henrique upgrades the middle of the lineup, second line, if you will, can play in the three, but, you know, he's a 2.5. Can play center, can play the wing, plays all situations. You know, that they just got harder to play against in it. And it can balance out their lines up front a little bit differently, especially adding Carrick too in the four. You know, Carrick for me is he's got some Sam Lafferty qualities to him. You know, Lafferty plays faster than Carrick. Like, Carrick's not as fast as Lafferty is, but you know, they just got better as a team there, and without having to sacrifice anybody off their active roster. I know Gagne went out on waivers, but you know, they improved today. And, you know, they just became even harder to play against. That's a great deal for Edmonton.
So we've seen Edmonton go out and make a move that you really like, and, you know, getting a couple of NHL players to add to their lineup. You know, Vegas has gone out and traded for Anthony Mantha. Colorado has done a couple of deals. You know, Dallas went and added Chris Tanev. So a lot of Western Conference powers have made significant moves here. Now, obviously, the Canucks have already done one big deal in Elias Lindholm, but, you know, watching all these other teams go out and make their additions as well, how much extra pressure do you think that adds? Or, you know, from an NHL front office perspective, really, when you see your potential playoff competitors making moves, do you feel a need to kind of keep up in that arms race?
I think that they do. I think that, so here's on balance, what's happened is, you know, traditionally Jimmy Rutherford likes to get ahead of the market, and he's done that with the Lindholm acquisition. And you know, I like the Lindholm acquisition. It's kind of hit a little bit of a speed bump here in recent days, if you will. And now I'm seeing I'm not an insider, but I'm just reading some of the same things you guys read. I'm seeing his name being bantied about which makes, I'm sure, him uncomfortable and maybe even the team a little bit uncomfortable. But having said that, you know, they've put themselves, the group that is, in a position to, you know, contend in playoffs. That's the bottom line. And whatever happens here going forward, I believe he's in on Guentzel. You know, and after I see this Henrique deal, you know, Henrique, you know, at 5.825, that just tells me that there's deals to be had out there for expiring contracts where you're going to be able to park some money with a with another team somewhere in the league. So I think Vancouver's still all in. I think that they're still trying to add. I think that I'd be very comfortable saying they're still swimming in the Guentzel waters. I've heard an interesting name today, guys, come up in just some of my people that I talk to on in the industry still, and I'm not trying to spread rumors, so I don't want anybody, but it is interesting, so I'm going to keep following up on it, is Tuck out of Buffalo is a name that's kind of coming up as well, and wouldn't that be an outstanding ad come playoff time for a playoff contending team to that big body who can play in your top six?
Well, that's interesting because, you know, they did the Mittelstadt trade, right? They've got a lot of guys signed long-term already in Buffalo and obviously a disappointing season. So, I mean, Alex Tuck, if he's on the market, there's going to be a ton of teams that are really, really interested in that guy because, as you said, big body speed, you know what he can do come playoff time. Another you know, thing that I'm always fascinated by dynamic around trade deadline time is, so we've seen a lot of names moved, but not Guentzel, right? And so I guess you could look at it two different ways. On the one hand, teams that might still be buyers maybe get a little more desperate, maybe want to pay a higher price, but you could also say there's fewer landing spots for Pittsburgh to shop Jake Guentzel to. In your experience, I mean, does that kind of thinking play a role? Does it bring the price down? Does it push the price up once you start to see those other dominoes fall?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting strategy that's taking place behind the scenes right now. And I'm going to double down on it and say this. Imagine if Guentzel isn't wanting to, first of all, he has a 12-team no trade, right? So he's got some say in what happens here. But second of all, imagine Guentzel's really happy in Pitt and he wants to potentially come back in the offseason. In that situation there, he might be also guiding what Pittsburgh can and can't do in terms of, you know, where he wants to be beyond the 12 team. So if there's a team outside the 12 and they're a contending team, he might actually be, you know, saying, you know what, for the good of the franchise, and we saw this years ago, this is kind of obscene. He's a different level player. But when Matt Sundin, you know, didn't want to get moved out of Toronto towards the end there and, you know, maybe sign back as a free agent, some of these things happen and there could be those discussions that are going on as well. You know, Jake, I know we'd really like to have you back. Jake says to Pittsburgh, I'd really like to come back. And I'm just spitballing strategy here because these things happen. He says, I'll move out for the good of the team. I'd like to come back. And that kind of, you know, Pittsburgh might settle for just a little bit less right now if they know that they're getting Jake back in the summertime. So there's a lot of balls in the air, a lot of moving parts. It'll be interesting to see how it all shakes out. And of course, let's not underestimate the medical too, guys, because you're going to want to have that medical, aren't you, to find out exactly what the timeline is here for Guentzel.
He's been out a while. What of the teams? So Vegas has made their move, right? But they still have cap space and they could keep going. And we know how aggressive McPhee and Co. are. Colorado's made their move, but they actually opened up cap space with some of their transactions today. They could still go. We haven't seen Carolina move. We've seen Wenberg go to New York, but they could still do stuff. They'll have $5 million or so still in cap space remaining. When you think about those teams, like, which team should be, in your view, the most all-in, the most aggressive in pursuit of Jake Guentzel?
Oh, great question. Jeez. Honestly, I keep coming back to Vancouver for the fit. Like I really do. He didn't really throw him into that mix, but
I meant to include them.
You meant, yeah. Vancouver for me, that's the most accommodating fit. If he's not going to re-sign or if he's not going to sign an extension, that makes a lot of sense for me. Like he's got a relationship with the coaches. He knows the management team. I don't like when you get traded in this league, people forget, you know, families, wives, girlfriends, kids, you know, your own lifestyle. Like, it matters where you go. People like to go to certain cities. And I know that sounds crazy, but that's a fact. So, you know, I still put Vancouver at the top there. I'm always hesitant with Carolina because even though they got cash, they don't seem to like to make deals for players on expiring deals, like expiring contracts. And they're unpredictable anyways. So the reality is this. Let's just be frank. If a team has the cash and they've got the capital, whether it be prospects or picks, Jake Guentzel, when healthy, is going to add to their lineup, their top line, arguably, for a playoff push. So all those teams should be in on it if they have an opportunity.
Sorry, I just want to ask you about Elias Lindholm again. I want to bring it back to this because I think they haven't been satisfied with what he's brought on the wing. And that was fundamentally what they were hoping for, was a guy to punch up their top six forward group, and he's playing on the third line right now. You know, I don't think it's in their plan to necessarily flip him again, but I don't think they'd hang up the phone if some team called with some harebrained scheme to acquire Lindholm necessarily between now and the deadline. Let's put it that way. That's a nice way to put it. With where, like, when you think about it, just hypothetically, because I can't remember a team paying a premium price to acquire a rental player and then flipping him before the deadline. Like, that's never happened. You know, you can bring up some of the guys that Rutherford's traded and then traded for and then traded out within the context of or the confines of a single season before, but none of them were like this. In your view, when you think about it, is that a troubling sign for a team to go out, pay a premium for a rental, and then be like, eh? Or is it a mature sign of, hey, you know, sometimes you make mistakes in this business, and if you can clean them up, that can be good process?
Tough one to answer, to be honest, right? Because I'm with you. I haven't seen this type of scenario rear its ugly head. Let's call it that, because it's uncomfortable for everybody, isn't it?
No doubt.
So I've never seen a situation like this. My gut tells me that you have to. It's too bad because we're right up against it now. I wish I could just say I wish I had another week to 10 days. I don't. I just don't see how they can make it happen. Well, no, pardon, that's wrong. I do see how they can trade him out. He's got no trade protection. Mm. I mean, there's a way, you know, if there's a will, there's a way. I'm just so uncomfortable discussing it because I've just never had to go down that road before. But I guess on balance, you're running a team, you're running a business, you want to get over the top as an organization. You got to do what you got to do sometimes and bite the bullet instead of sitting on something, hoping it turns out better. So I'm at the stage now, I guess anything's possible. Guys, he hasn't, like, some of this is on him, right? Like, he hasn't, for me, been good enough. Like, that's just a fact. He hasn't been good enough for me in recent segments and after a decent start. So, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see probably in the next 24 hours, I would think.
Another Canucks player I wanted to ask you about, Jason, is Nils Höglander, who, you know, he's playing with Elias Pettersson right now. He's doing some pretty impressive things, scoring 5-on-5. He signed at 1.1 this year and next. And, you know, even his minutes have started to creep up a little bit, whereas previously he'd often been in that, you know, 10-11 minute range. He was up over 15 last night. What are you seeing from Nils Höglander? And, I mean, how much value would he have if the Canucks were willing to include him in a trade at the deadline?
I don't think his value's ever been higher than it is right today as we wake up this morning, personally.
Yep.
I mean, watch that game last night, you know, on the game-tying goal. If you break down that entire shift, guys, and actually the shift even before that, I mean, he's getting under checks. I think it was Jacob Mulvarer, maybe, that he took to the net. You know, he's getting under checks, extending plays. He's built like a fire hydrant, as we all know. He's got leverage. He's part of the solution for the Canucks right now. He's part of that identity, I think, that they want to have come playoff time. You know, he reminds me of Gallagher when Gallagher was the better version of Gallagher. I feel like he's trending a little bit that way. You know, he's not going to be a glove in your face type of guy and scrum guy, but in terms of playing really hard between the whistles, I don't think his value has ever been higher. And we've addressed this all year. Like, to me, he bought in. Like, there was a message sent to him last year, right? We need you to be this and we need you to do this. And what more can this guy do? Like, really valuable player.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch this year, no doubt about it. Jason, thank you for doing this. It's been a very, very busy day. We'll see if it continues until the trade deadline. Hopefully they wait until Friday to do at least a little bit of this business. And we'll chat next week. We'll take stock of it all next week.
Yeah, hang in there, fellas. Let's see how it goes.
All right, thanks. That is Jason Bukla, who, of course, joins us here every Wednesday, part of Sportsnet's NHL coverage, former NHL scout as well, weighing in on some of what's happened around the league, some of the things from the Canucks perspective as well, and raving about the value that Nils Höglander is bringing right now. And as you just kind of like, especially this morning, and it seems like, who knows, maybe the Canucks aren't super, super in on Gensel right now. We can talk about that more in the rumor roundup section of the whiteboard in the last segment.
They're never going to be out
right
on Gensel.
This is the thing.
We have to like caption it the right way. They're never going to be out on this player. They cannot quit him. It is not possible for a player to go on the sort of run that Gensel did in 2017, winning this executive group a Stanley Cup, and them to be like, we've abandoned pursuit. Like, while he is available, the Canucks will be in. But they don't seem to be very confident that they'll land him.
And I think a part of that has to be, or I would imagine, if they're not confident, that they're unwilling to put Nils Höglander on the table, which I think makes perfect sense at this point, right? Because if you do Jake Gensel for Nils Höglander, and let's say you're flipping Elias Lindholm at the same time, it feels to me like you're just opening up another hole in your lineup, right? In your top six. Because, okay, yeah, you'd have Pugh Suter there as a complimentary guy, but are you plugging Ilya Mikheyev in that open spot then? And it's not that it doesn't improve you. It absolutely improves you. Of course it does. It's just how much does it improve you, and how much do you sacrifice for next year and beyond when you're giving up on the really cheap labor of Nils Höglander? And look, I have been very much in favor of aggression and going for it. But the thing is, as soon as you start taking multiple pieces off the roster, off the current roster to facilitate it, it instantly impacts the marginal upgrade you're getting in Gensel. That's the thing. And I think Höglander's just playing too well right now. He's clicking with Pettersson, which has been an issue all year, finding guys who are clicking with Pettersson. He's playing that role. Tocchet is starting to trust him more. I'm not saying you can't do it, but man, it would have to be the perfect storm of a situation, I think, to get them to put Nils Höglander in a deal right now.
Remember last spring, the idea of a long-term deal for Höglander?
Uh-huh.
Would have been nice.
It would have been great. Are you kidding?
Now, that said, they're realizing cap benefit on keeping him at 1.1 this year and next, and their contention window is far realer than we were imagining 12 months ago. So,
next year.
Not going to crank out the full backpat machine here.
Especially considering the number of UFAs they have, right? And like Dakota Joshua going to be in line for a big raise. Can they keep Teddy Bluger? Sam Lafferty. Having Nils Höglander locked in as a guy who you feel good about playing next to Elias Pettersson at 1.1 is a huge luxury going into the summer.
If Höglander and Suter are legit top six complementary pieces, right? You only need one more guy. That's a nice place to be. It's a very nice place to be. Now, the only issue, I guess, would be that they're both slight enough that Garland probably can't be that sixth guy.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only sort of drawback, but that's a small potatoes drawback relative to the value being realized by having a two-way ace like Suter and a goal-scoring two-way ace like Nils Höglander. They asked me on the morning show, and I'm curious to throw it to you because I don't buy it. Do you think Höglander is like some totally different guy right now than he was previously? Because I would say no. I think he's just getting more opportunity. I think he basically showed up a ready-made second-line caliber winger. And I just think it's taken
a while. I don't
think
he's totally different. Like, I can buy that he's improved some of his habits and his, the staples that he's playing more
in
stronger. The style that Rick Tocchet wants. But I don't know. Like, he's always been a really good forechecker and really good around the net and nose for the net and all that.
I think he's a little stickier in that, like, even the battles he loses, like, sometimes Höglander will be coming in as a forechecker and he'll catch the defender who's trying to move the puck, and he doesn't actually come out with the puck, but he like stops the breakout. You know what I mean? He like holds the guy on the wall. Likewise, when he's the first to the puck, defensemen hit him, and it's like they can't actually get the puck from him very quickly, and by the time they do, support has arrived from the Canucks, and it's like a whole thing that they have to go through. I think that's like a strength improvement. I think he's stickier because of that, but short of that,
and like maybe a 10% or 15% improvement on his defensive zone awareness. Like, I fundamentally think this guy's been the same guy since he arrived.
The strengths of his game are still the strengths of his, that what they've always been,
yeah.
Right? And you're seeing that play out.
I just think his opportunity's ramped up.
This text comes in, Hoglander is shooting 20% plus. Would this be a sell high moment, or is that a number that can be carried consistently?
No, it can't.
He's not going to shoot that high consistently, but he's also one of the, like, his 5-on-5 goal scoring in his minutes is exceptional across the NHL this year. So if you're amping up his minutes, you can still see really good production, especially if you ever get some consistent power play time as well. You can see similar production. The other thing I would say is that he's not just a goal scorer. Like, his role on a line with Elias Pettersson, to me, isn't even necessarily primarily goal scoring. As Bukla was just saying, you look at the goal that Pettersson scores, and Hoglander is instrumental in keeping that play alive below the goal line, right? That's what he can bring to Elias Pettersson, as that kind of, yeah, he's undersized to do it, but he has the strength, he has the tenacity to be that kind of complimentary puck hound for a star player. And look, his finishing might come and go throughout his career. That's how it is for most not truly elite finishers, but the fact that he's doing those other things which help keep plays alive, you know, getting in on the forecheck, getting the pucks loose for Pettersson, his shooting percentage is going to regress, but I still think he can be a top six player for you even when it does regress.
Yeah, he's really good, and for sure 20%, this is an outlier.
Yeah,
career rate is 12%. That's above average. That's probably where you'd I would view him as an average finisher, probably, you know, like, great shot against the Ducks. Don't get me wrong. He's had some really nice moments. He might have improved a little bit in that area.
But he's gone through shooting percentage lulls in his career, too.
100%. Huge ones. Yeah. Huge ones. He's gone whole seasons shooting less than 8%.
Yeah.
But, man, I just think the opportunity side of this is also such a big deal, right? And I think that's one of the main reasons, you know, if he's playing at a level where Rick Tocchet's going to play him with Elias Pettersson, for example... I mean, that's a game changer. You know, this is a This is a guy who spent 150 minutes with Jason Dickinson, right? Like, Tanner Pearson was one of his most common line mates. Sheldon Dries, right? Like, he spent a lot of time in the Boudreaux era on bottom of the lineup, healthy scratch occasionally. And that also, I think, contributes to a, you know, shooting clip during his Boudreaux stint that I don't think reflects his true talent any more than I think this year's does either. I think he's a solid 10 or 12% shooter. And yeah, if he ends up playing on the power play, if he ends up being a fixture there, you know, my view of him has always been he's like a smash mouth version of Kelly Yarncroc.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know that I see him as more than like a 45-50 point guy at his apex, but man, that can be a hugely valuable player, especially if a lot of that's coming at 5-on-5, and especially if they have unique puck battle winning transitional value the way that Hoglander does. He's just a really good player.
Yeah, and especially if he's playing with Elias Pettersson. Sometimes we've seen it where it's like he's theoretically playing with Elias Pettersson, but then Pettersson has like 5 more 5-on-5 minutes than him at the end of the night, right? Because Tocchet is sheltering him or moving him away. Last night, we didn't see that. Last night, it was he's truly a top six player in terms of the minutes he's getting. If that's the reality for Hoglander, if he can keep earning those types of opportunities and he's playing big, consistent minutes with Elias Pettersson, I'm not concerned about his production. Whatever his shooting percentage does, however it fluctuates, if he's in that type of opportunity, I'm not concerned about his production. All right, we'll take a break here. Final segment coming up. We'll do the whiteboard in the last segment today. Get you caught up on everything going on with the Vancouver Canucks. Mere days ahead of the NHL trade deadline. That's coming up next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.